What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Mavs Film Room podcast. I'm your host, Jay Apodgy. We're coming to you on Monday, November 13th, 2023 at 8:15 p.m. Central Time. The Mavericks are 8-2. That's 8 wins and 2 losses through their first 10 games of the season. It's been a dream start, honestly, for the Mavs. I think the only thing better than this would be 10-0. I mean, technically speaking, 9-1, too, but you know what I'm saying. The Mavs have looked really good here over these last couple games against the Clippers and Pelicans. We'll talk about that. Kyrie Irving is starting to look like himself again. And the Mavericks are in the midst of a 4-game road trip, which will take them through one more game in New Orleans against the Pelicans in their in-season tournament play. And then they'll go to D.C. on the second night of a back-to-back to play the Wizards. And then they'll finish the road trip off in Milwaukee against the Bucks before coming back to Dallas to play the Sacramento Kings. So no letting up here for the schedule, but the Mavericks seem up to the test right now and excited to see what the next week holds for us. Rohan Fazel, always great for you to join the podcast. How's it going, guys?
Good, man. You know, when the Mavs are good, pretty much everything's going well for me. So, yeah, I've just been enjoying this 8-2 start. Like, it's the best of the Luka era and the best we've had since 2004, 2005, which was, funnily enough, a season where we won, I think, 50 games on the dot, and we got to the second round after a hard-fought first-round series against the Rockets with T-Mac and Yao, where we blew them out by 40 in Game 7. But many people viewed that year as kind of a step back compared to the previous seasons, where especially 2002, 2003. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm slightly annoyed by the Mavs because, you know, only one loss at home, which was the game I happened to attend. But and said team, the Raptors, who beat us, are getting spanked by the Wizards right now. So, you know, and the Wizards are not a good team. So if I keep on talking about it, I might get a little more annoyed. But, you know, for sure, this is a good problem that I'm having, being greedy. So everything's good. Yeah.
I'm doing pretty swaggy. Dude, Kyrie has been feeding families, basically, with this play in these past few games. And we'll talk about it later. But that's kind of all that's been on my mind, weirdly, like for the last week and a half, is just Kyrie being in this mode, you know, just flipping on that killer switch every time that we doubt him.
No, I mean, it's been amazing to see Kyrie Irving, I think, return to the form that we expected to see out of him. I mean, the 27 point per game score from last year. Last night against the Pelicans, he was the Mavericks' leading scorer with 35 points in the game. He had 7 three-pointers. Just a masterclass from Kyrie Irving. He was aggressive from the beginning of the game, which was something that I think we hadn't really seen to that point in the season. Like, we always kind of saw him come alive, like in the second quarter or in the second half. Like last season, famously, he came alive in the fourth quarter. But these last two games, I think the Mavericks have really made it a point to get him going, and we see the difference that it's made because, you know, the Mavericks haven't been a great first quarter team this year, as we kind of tweeted out earlier today. Their net rating in the first quarter is a minus. I don't have the stat in front of me now, but it's the 25th best in the NBA. It's not very good. I think it's a minus 7.8 or something. So it's leaves a lot to be desired. But I think Kyrie Irving, looking like himself and being aggressive in the first quarter, has really helped the Mavericks get off to better starts in these last two games.
Not to really over exaggerate it, but Luka's also had a little bit of inconsistency in his scoring in some of these games. Not too marked, but he had that 17 point game against, I forget who, and I forget what his total was against the Raptors, but also wasn't as formidable if I remember correctly. Regardless, we've needed Kyrie to step up for a while. And honestly, in that game against the Clippers, I was asking myself that question for a lot of the first half. And when Luka sat out, I mean, Kyrie really took over. And that hot streak has continued. I think Tim Hardaway Jr. has basically been the unsung hero of this first 10 games. But Kyrie has kind of taken those laurels off of his hands in the past two or three.
Yeah, to both of you guys' points, Jay, I know you had that little tidbit about the Mavs' net rating by quarter. And yeah, you're right about being 25th in the first quarter, which, you know, obviously there's a lot to work on with that. But the following quarters, 2 through 4, as we noted in the tweet, you know, the Mavs are first. And especially in the third quarter, it's a scorching net rating. Like, it's by far the first, which is crazy. I don't think I could have ever expected that out of the Mavs for any stretch of games, any significant stretch of games this season. So, like, to see this, like, I know very early in the season, we are 100% going to go through some adversity and we're going to definitely face stronger teams. But I mean, that is something you'd see out of a contending team. I'm not saying it's going to, if we keep the team the exact same way, that it's going to keep on going through here from here to game 82. But I'm just saying, like, you really couldn't have asked for much of a better start. And Rohan, to your point, the game where Lucas scored, like, what, 17 or 18? Pretty sure that was against Chicago, and that was a great win because the rest of the team stepped up to help him out. And the game against the Raptors, he scored in the high 20s, but I think in the high 20s at the very least. But it was pretty, by his standards, I don't think it was a really efficient game. And like in other aspects of the game, especially ball handling and, you know, taking care of the ball, he was a little lacking. So, and so was, you know, a lot of the team. So that wasn't great, but, you know, for the most part, like, he's been good. I of course, he's been really good. Like, I don't have much bad to say about Luka at all.
Yeah, we're often guilty of this. I'm often guilty of it, is taking Luka for granted, because, like, through all this, we didn't even mention the game that he had against the Clippers, which was, you could argue, the best game of his career in terms of scoring volume and efficiency. But obviously, I think that 60-point game against the Knicks last year has to be number one. But against the Clippers, 44 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds. He was 7 of 21 from the field, 6 of 9 from 3. I mean, 44 points on 80% shooting in 32 minutes is crazy. That game was unreal to watch Luka. It felt like every time he let the ball go, it was in the basket. And obviously, like, you know, he was a huge reason why the Mavericks destroyed the Clippers. I mean, destroyed may not even do justice to what they did to the Clippers. You know, but Kyrie Irving, you know, was right there with him with 27 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. And then, of course, like I said, against the Pelicans last night, 35 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists. I mean, it's been nice to see Kyrie Irving shooting and scoring come alive, because obviously that's what we love to see out of him. But we have to mention some of the other stuff, like rebounding. Six rebounds in each of the last two games. Kyrie Irving had 7 assists last game. And I believe that he's on the verge of averaging a career high in assists. And of course, it's only been 10 games, so there's that caveat. But he's averaging 6.8 assists per game this year. His career high is 6.9, which came his second season with Boston. So, I mean, Kyrie Irving is fitting really well with the Mavericks. That's really the big takeaway here.
Yeah, he had a 10 assist game recently. Just to kind of cap off that discussion about the Raptors game, Luka actually had 31 points there. It seems a little nitpicky, but that was a game where a triple-double would have probably gotten us the win. So, you know, not the most all-time Luka performance, but not a bad one either. Very nitpicky of me to bring it up.
But Fazl, going back to your point about the net ratings per quarter for the Mavericks, right? Like, I have it pulled up now. Like, their first quarter is minus 10.2, which is 25th in the league. Their offensive rating in the first quarter is a 114.5. Their defensive rating is a 124.7. Obviously, that is terrible in terms of their defensive rating. Second quarter, they're a plus 7.8, first in the NBA. Offensive rating is 119. Their defensive rating is 111.3. Third quarter, like you mentioned, is far and away the best in the NBA, plus 17.4. Their offensive rating is 128.6. Their defensive rating stays constant at 111.2. Sorry. And then the fourth quarter, they're a plus 9.5, also first in the NBA. Offensive rating of 124.9 and defensive rating of 115.4. So I just said a lot of numbers here, but essentially, in these first 10 games, the Mavericks have made a habit of starting the game slow and then morphing into the best team in the NBA over the other three quarters of the game.
That sounds kind of ridiculous, but it's almost just as ridiculous to say that it's literally the truth, at least by that stat.
It is. And of course, like, we're still very early in the season to where individual games have a huge impact on these stats, which is why these last two games probably have taken the Mavericks to first in the NBA net rating over the last three quarters of the game. But I mean, it is pretty remarkable just to see what their offense is capable of doing. I mean, 128.6 in the third quarter, 125 offensive rating in the fourth quarter. I mean, those are ridiculous numbers. They would be number one in the league by a healthy margin. And I think the most interesting thing, though, we can get into the offense in a little bit, but the thing that stands out to me the most is the second and third quarter defensive ratings, which is right around 111. If the Mavs were to maintain that defensive efficiency over the course of the entire game, they'd be right there on the heels of having a top 10 defensive team in the NBA. I mean, number 10 right now is the Portland Trail Blazers at 110. You know, let's say they were at 111.3. That would be tied with the Clippers for 14th and just below the Suns and the Warriors for 13th and 12th. So I don't know if the Mavericks are capable of doing it, but that's perhaps the most interesting thing that I saw in all these net rating stats.
Yeah, with that continued emphasis on how much further the Mavs can progress on defense, I did see a tweet from NBA University, and I linked to it. I shared it from the account that says that in half-court defense, the Mavs tied with the Heat for 16th in the league, which, you know, again, small sample size, blah, blah, blah. But when you consider the fact that the playoffs really turn in basketball into a half-court game, being league average, basically being mediocre and not god-awful, that goes a long way, especially when we're talking about the non-garbage time minutes, because I'm sure, like, some of these websites that give ratings, such as Cleaning the Glass is one, they make sure they automatically filter garbage time minutes out of stuff like net ratings and whatnot. So I don't know where NBA University, where they got their stats from, but I'm just saying, like, there is really a pathway for legit contention, I think. We're going to have to see, obviously, how these trends bear out throughout the rest of the season, but there's a lot to be excited about.
Yeah, and you kind of look at the last two games. You talked about cleaning the glass and filtering out garbage time. Honestly, we need to get ourselves a subscription then, because, I mean, the last two games, garbage time basically started after halftime. Like, the Mavericks were blowing out the Clippers and the Pelicans by enough that the second half was, you know, the Mavericks didn't take it as seriously. They were still extremely explosive on offense, but defensively, you know, that they let up a little bit. Like, in the third quarter of that Clippers game, I believe the Mavericks gave up 38 points, and it still wasn't close. So, you know, of course, like, cleaning those lapses up will be ideal, but at the same time, like, the Mavericks have shown that they can lock in for at least a half defensively, and it has to be demoralizing for the opponent just to see how, you know, explosive the Mavericks offense is capable of being.
It's also crazy to think that a rookie has had this big of an effect on the defensive play of this team in just 10 games. And in, I think, maybe the one or two games that Derek Lively has not played with the team, you can see the difference in presence. That's not to say that Dwight Powell isn't also having a great year offensively. It's just nobody is Derek Lively, even at age 19 and going on 20. So, yeah, he hasn't been in a lot of foul trouble either in these first few games. And he played against Jokic as well as Vucevic in Chicago. He had some pretty big matchups that he didn't shy away from. So as far as he's been tested, we've also got a lot to say about him.
Yeah, the one game that Lively didn't play was against the Raptors. And of course, I think everybody who was there at the game, plus everybody online, we all noted how much we missed Derek out there. And yeah, to your point, Rohan, that game felt basically like a redux of a game from last season and in all the worst ways. And I really kind of hated it. And it wasn't really anybody's fault per se, especially because that was the third game in four nights. But, you know, Dwight wasn't cutting it. Maxey came back for that one game and then he got shut down because his toe is still bothering him quite a bit. We got like 5 minutes of Rashawn Holmes and, you know, he wasn't really, I don't think he's probably not in game shape or something yet to be handling a significant workload unless injuries occur or something like that. So, you know, there's not really much you can say there. And obviously like your best big man defender after those guys, or maybe even better than them with Lively out, is like Grant or Luka, which that's not going to win you games against a team of the size that the Raptors have, even if they're kind of mediocre themselves. But yeah, yeah. One team, one past Mavericks team that I really feel like this team reminds me of is the 2014-15 Mavs before the Rondo trade, where, you know, similar themes, blistering offense. That team kind of played with some kind of pace before the trade, I think. Even though, of course, you know, you had old Dirk on the roster and that team in general was kind of older. In some respects, like, you know, the point guard position was a clear hole for that team. We all thought that it was great what Jimmy Nelson was doing, but he wasn't that next step in terms of being able to contend. And, you know, you ask some people here right now, like in the fan base, okay, we definitely still do need big man help that needs to be addressed, that Derek Lively can't do it alone. And or we need like a wing such as, I don't know, OG. So I guess, you know, Derek Jones or Josh Green, they can't do it alone. And yet, I don't know, I still want to kind of see how this team performs throughout a greater subset of games before making any kind of move, even though I see on paper how that might be necessary. Like, sometimes it's just good to see what you've got, right?
Yeah, I don't think the Mavericks should be in any rush to make moves right now. I mean, obviously that they have some areas that they could improve in personnel wise. And we'll talk about it at some point. I don't think today's that day for it. I think they have a winning recipe at the moment. You got to let the season play out a little bit more and see what you got, as you said, before you really start, you know, trying to determine whether to make a move or not. But I want to go back to Rohan's point about Derek Lively, and even what Fazl talked about too, is just that how important he's proven to be for the Mavericks. And we saw against the Raptors, like it was literally a repeat of a game from last season without Derek Lively in the lineup. You know, Derek Lively, when he's on the floor, the Mavericks have a defensive rating of 110.4, which would be a top 10 defense in the league. And the three-man lineup combination of Derek Jones Jr., Grant Williams, and Derek Lively has a defensive rating of 107.5 in the 99 minutes that they've played together, which would be, again, well into the top 10 in defensive efficiency. So there's some bones of a good defense here, but it's just about putting it all together.
Well said, Jay. And a lot of numbers have been thrown around, but I do think just qualitatively, those three guys on the floor together, especially, not overstating, but especially with Derek Lively, you get to see Coach Kidd really, you know, show the bells and whistles of this offense. Like, he does double screens at the top of the 3-point line with Lively and Derek Jones Jr., which is like, you would think maybe there's like not enough strength there, but weirdly that sets the entire defense for a team like the Clippers scrambling. And, you know, you've seen it against good teams as well as teams who aren't necessarily going to scare you as much on paper. So I just think that lineup is going to be a good defensive lineup throughout games and against good opponents based off of what we've seen so far. Even in that Nuggets loss, I feel like the team was by and far pretty good. Shots just didn't fall at points.
Yeah, the thing about that Nuggets game is I think everybody performed roughly up to standards except for Kyrie, who was still, you know, working his way into form from a slow start. And I mean, of course, I'm not going to hold that against him. I'm not going to be super mad at him for that or whatever. But, you know, I just am wondering how that game would have gone if Kyrie was playing like he has been these past couple of games. I don't think it's a huge stretch to say we'd win that game.
It's not a huge stretch, and I think the Mavericks played a lot better in the second half of that game. And one thing is clear about this team, at least from these first 10 games, is that they don't quit. They compete. I mean, even the Raptors game, like, yeah, it was kind of a beatdown, but at the same time, it wasn't really for lack of effort. I watched that game, and I'm just like, the Mavs are getting overpowered by a longer, more athletic team. And perhaps if the Mavericks were more seasoned, in terms of having played more games together, maybe they could have, come away with the win there. But, you know, against the Nuggets, like, I agree with you. If Kyrie Irving was playing like prime Kyrie Irving, it's not a stretch to say the Mavericks could have won, or at least kept it a lot closer than the final score indicated.
I mean, we saw it against the Clippers, which was in-season tournament game number 2, and maybe we'll see it again tomorrow in in-season tournament game number 3. I mean, we did see it against the Pelicans last game out, so maybe we're not due for a repeat performance, but he goes on tears, and he was on a tear last season before he was traded. So, fully possible. Fully possible we get another 30-point Kyrie game.
Yeah, I mean, and look, there's been a lot of discussion, I think, over who's the Mavericks' third best player, right? And gun to my head, if I had to answer that question, I would say Tim Hardaway Jr. I think that's probably the correct answer. But the beauty of this Mavericks team right now, at least through these first 10 games, is their third best player could be anyone. It could be Tim Hardaway. It could be Derek Lively on some nights. It could be Grant Williams on other nights. Like, they have multiple guys who can step up and score 15 or 20 per game. We've even seen Derrick Jones Jr. do it. So I think that's the beauty of this team, is just so much deeper. And if Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic are playing at the level that we've seen these last few games, I mean, 144 points against the Clippers, 136 against the Pelicans. The Mavericks were past the 100-point mark in the third quarter in both of those games. I mean, if they're playing at that level, it really doesn't matter if the Mavericks have a clear-cut third best player or not, because the top two players are just that damn good.
And some nights, Tim Hardaway Jr.'s shot just isn't going to fall like that. And Grant Williams has had nights where I think he had 25 points and 7 threes made or something ridiculous like that. So you really can't. Derek Jones Jr. has had a couple games this year where he's just been on a tear. So, I mean, we've kind of talked about everybody in this episode, but top to bottom, it kind of feels like everybody has a lot of fight in them. And things are somewhat clicking. Despite a couple losses, despite some slow starts. And anybody could be the Mavericks' third best player, truly. Well said, Jay.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys both bring up great points, and I think the versatility of this roster and just overall the better quality compared to some years past means a lot, even if we don't have a third superstar talent. Like, you know, I think 2020, that year, taught me quite a bit about basketball, because that's kind of when super teams started going a little bit out of fashion. Obviously the Lakers were very good that year, and you know, with or without the bubble, I do believe they would have won the title, and you know, they only had two superstars, which kind of feels like more of a return to form. Obviously the NBA is stacked this year, with lots of talent, teams with very high top-end talent. You know, just look at the Suns, look at the Clippers, and of course they're off to slow starts themselves, but I feel like, you know, eventually they got to pick it up too, and they're going to be formidable opponents. But I don't know, there's a lot to be said about a team that's just very solid top to bottom, with two superstars who can carry you across the finish line, you know, because of course, defense wins championships, but if you're not, as Jay likes to say, the name of the game is buckets. So,
hey, I didn't say that. Bill Russell said that.
Okay, yeah, even better. Bill Russell, of all people.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, there's obviously more to the game than just scoring, but I mean, look at Grant Williams, for example. Like we just talked about, the Mavericks have put up 280 points in over the last two games. You know how many points Grant Williams has in the last two games? He has 2 points, and the Mavericks managed to score 280 points in the last two games. So, I mean, scoring as we know, is not the problem for this team. It's going to be consistent defensive effort. But with the kind of offense the Mavericks have, like, it kind of changes a little bit about how you evaluate them, because not many teams can produce on offense like the Mavericks are capable of. And we see Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic bringing out the best in each other with a lot of this off-ball movement. I mean, Luka's shooting a lot more catch-and-shoot threes this year. We saw that in the game yesterday. Luka had a nice cut, and Kyrie Irving found him for the layup. Those kind of things didn't happen last year or the year before that. So it's truly a new era, and that's not even mentioning the Mavericks are playing with more tempo and more pace this year. Their offense is just so much more versatile.
Yeah, they're playing to personnel very, very well, and it allows Kyrie to kind of just flourish when Luka's not on the floor, but as well as when Luka's on the floor. And Luka talked about it in preseason media availability, but he really has been working on that off-ball movement and finding himself in the right places and reading the timing of what's going on the court without the ball in his hands in the NBA. Not that he wasn't already good at that from his time in Europe, but it's a slightly different game. And especially on this team, everything kind of runs through him. So, I mean, Kyrie's been hitting at the right time and Luka's been hitting at the right time. I do want to temper all this, though, because it has been 10 games and the sample size is pretty low. Although we're all excited, the clear flaw in this team is the front line. We don't have a defensive anchor other than a rookie center. And as crazy as that sounds, because Derek Lively has been great this season, that doesn't make me confident as far as how far we go in the playoffs, right? So even though we've gotten a somewhat hot start from the Mavericks this first 10 games, I'm not sitting here any more confident than I was coming into this season. I still think it's going to be a dogfight to get there, and health may not be on the Mavericks side later in the season.
Yeah, I mean, health is obviously the big question mark for every team. I disagree with you, though. I think this start has given me more confidence about what the Mavericks are capable of. I do agree with you that the defense needs to improve for them to be considered a serious contender. I mean, as good as the offense is, you have to have a respectable defense, and 24th in defensive efficiency is not going to cut it, no matter how good the Mavs offense is. So I agree with you on that. I think that's going to be the point of emphasis for the Mavericks as they get closer to the trade deadline, is trying to acquire another piece or a couple other pieces that can help them play better team defense. But as I like to say, you know, the 2021-22 Mavericks, it took them a few months to really come into their own defensively, and maybe the COVID absences helped them get the system down better than they would have if they were playing stars every single night. But I still think, like, it's early and we shouldn't draw too many conclusions about the good, but that also means that we shouldn't draw too many conclusions about the bad too. And I understand that it's easy to do that considering how bad the Mavs were on defense last year, but let's not fully write them off this year. I think they're capable of doing better than they've shown thus far.
Yeah, fully agreed on the defensive concerns. I do think that, I mean, as far as we have seen so far, that the Mavs are going to be a very good regular season team if no other moves are made. But in the playoffs, as you were talking about, Rohan, like, Derek Lively's a rookie center. I don't think he's even 20 yet, so kind of having to rely on him heavily in the playoffs makes me pause a little. But yeah, that being said, I don't know if we necessarily need to trade for a starter or maybe just like a more legitimate backup big. Like, I mean, if Maxi was fully healthy and playing like his 2020 self, that would be a different story, but he's not. And it's possible he'll never be like that again. Quite possible, in fact. But, you know, someone along the lines of, I don't know, Jonathan Isaac or Brandon Clark, who himself is injured. But somebody like that as a backup would probably do a lot for this team. But again, like, you know, that's all trade talk, and I think that's pretty far down the line. I'm not really looking to get into that right now. But, you know, just your concern duly noted. It's something that I'm sure the front office is still going to be talking about and doing a lot behind the scenes for.
I'm also slightly concerned about an over-reliance perhaps on Derek Jones Jr., but I don't think it's that. It's not even close to Derek Lively. I mean, Derek Jones Jr. has very hot games, very good games, and games where he does all the little things but doesn't really show up on this box score as much. And those are both good games from Derek Jones Jr. The best ability is availability for a guy like him. I'm just perhaps concerned that he won't be able to score the same way later on in the season, just because it's really a game of runs.
Yeah, we'll see. But I think the Mavericks are fortunate enough to have Josh Green at that position too. They have Tim Hardaway Jr. If they need more offense, so they have options. I think getting a little bit more size and athleticism is probably what they'll be looking at. But again, the trade deadline is too far away for me to really care about it at this point. But it's just been nice to see the Mavericks playing good basketball. It hasn't felt like they've struggled too much in these games. And sure, it hasn't been against the strongest caliber of opponents. But like I said, after the longest preseason trip in NBA history, Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving only got to play 7 minutes together in the preseason. The Mavericks are incorporating 7 new players onto the team. You know, they've dealt with injuries to Luka and Kyrie. I think that this is like more than fine. 8-2 in these games is much better than I expected them to be. And the fact that we're here gives me a lot more confidence going forward. And hopefully they'll improve, because it feels like this team is serious about wanting to get better every single day.
And don't doubt Dante.
Don't doubt Dante Exum.
Yeah, exactly.
We tried to tell you. And honestly, like, all jokes aside, like, he's been solid in, you know, in his minutes. He doesn't play a ton, but as a backup ball handler, he's been very, very steady. Doesn't turn the ball over a lot. Is capable of getting out and running in transition, especially off of rebounds. I mean, per 36 minutes, I believe he's averaging like 15.5 points per game and 9 rebounds per game. Obviously, if you played him 36 minutes, I don't think he would get those stats, but it just goes to show you, in the limited minutes he plays, his impact is there. And of course, he helps the defense too. So I've been very happy with the addition of Dante Exum. I'd like to see him play more. And the Mavs have a lot more versatility and depth this year. All right. Well, I think that's a good stopping point, considering that we got 2 more games coming up here over the next couple of days. So there's going to be more to talk about after that. I don't know if you guys have any closing thoughts for this episode.
The Pelicans in-season tournament logo looks insane, and I am curious what their uniforms look like, so I'm going to do that right now as we close this episode, but I want to get your thoughts. Is that a W or an L? I think it's so, like, glaring that I kind of love it.
What do you mean W or an L? Like the court?
Just, like, the logo, the uniforms. I kind of like the logo. It looks like a Taco Bell commercial a little bit, but
I actually don't. I don't hate it. I just don't like the blue, like, floor. I think that's a little bit too much. But the logo itself is kind of nice. And you know, if they kept like the sidelines and the baseline that blue color, and just use like a normal color for the wood, I think that it would look perfect.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the uniforms, as far as I can remember, they're not too bad for the Pelicans. The court is incredibly garish, and I'm not a fan of, like, those of these wacky colored courts. Like, you know, if you want to go crazy for a jersey, be my guest. But a lot of these in-season tournament courts, like, I was watching the Rockets game the other day that was in Houston, and that shit was insane. I don't like a lot of these courts.
I don't like it at all. I was watching the Suns and Lakers play last Friday, and I don't know, man. I just feel like you can't see the players as well, because a lot of times the uniforms are like the same color as the court. But on TV, the colors kind of clash with each other, so it almost looks like they're blending in. You know, and then you have the skin tones of the players too that just make it really difficult to see on some of these darker courts. So it's like, I don't think they tested them on TV. I really don't. And you know, the league probably achieved their goal of getting people to talk about the courts. But at the same time, I hate it. I don't like it at all. The Maverick City Edition court was okay, because it wasn't a ridiculously colored inside. Like, it was gray. It was somewhat normal colored court. The Pelicans, the Nuggets that we saw a few weeks ago, like, these are just ridiculous. It has no business being on an NBA floor.
I think the uniforms are a W. I still think it's going to look, I doubt both teams are going to wear their city edition uniforms for the in-season tournament.
No, right? The Mavs are wearing white tomorrow. Pelicans are wearing their city. Yeah.
I think that looks pretty good. Although I think you said the court was blue. I think that's going to look awful.
Yeah, it will. It's basically like the Nuggets court, maybe slightly darker shade of blue.
Okay, yeah, I hate it already.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think I will see if they continue it next year. I have my doubts about it, but we're talking about it, so maybe they will. But Roland Fozzle, appreciate you guys for coming on. It's a fun episode. Always enjoy talking to you about the Mavs, and it's a big week ahead for the Mavericks, but I'm feeling good about them. So we'll continue to watch. We'll hopefully do a Spaces maybe after one of these games. Can't promise, but we'll try. And if you haven't followed us on Twitter at Mavs Film Room, we just reached 11,800 followers, so thank you for that. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we'll be back with another episode very soon. Go Mavs.